Good morning. My name is Melanie, and I've been a grateful member of the Cedar Ridge family for about 25 years now. Today, we are continuing our series called Bottled Up, looking at how we can handle our emotions in a healthy way and what that might look like for us as followers of Jesus. Last week, Ruth talked about anger, and today we'll be talking about grief. Now, most of us tend to think of grief as acute and dramatic, often the death of a loved one. But grief comes in many forms, and it's really just our response to a hard loss. Jobs, homes, close relationships, beloved pets, maybe losing our physical capacity through illness or aging. And grief can be more chronic than acute. It can become what's called complicated grief if we have multiple griefs that we haven't processed over time. Complicated grief is common in communities that have been oppressed or traumatized over time, like racial and ethnic groups, veterans with PTSD, and LGBTQ people. We may feel grief over tragedies and violence on the other side of the world. My deepest grief comes from what we're doing to our home, our planet. Those pictures of starving polar bears and oil-covered wildlife, that kind of grief seems so overwhelming, so existential. It's no wonder humans mostly ignore it or deny it. What can you do? But the grief is still there. So, as we talk about processing grief today, try to think beyond the usual idea of grief, the wrenching immediate type. Because this past year has been a time of great loss and grief for all of us, personally, nationally, globally. So much has been lost. Maybe we've lost loved ones to COVID or had our own health compromised, but all of us have experienced loss and are grieving at some level. Even just our sense of normalcy, right? Going to work and school, coming to Cedar Ridge, visiting elderly relatives, our election process. Just about everything we thought of as normal has been disrupted, lost in some sense. And maybe you haven't thought of those things as a source of grief, but they are profound and they can leave scars. Our society and Western culture as a whole is not a fan of grieving or sadness. We aren't supposed to be down or weak. And if we are, we better be quick about it. We are expected to stay within certain parameters. The norm is to be strong and stoic. We don't want to inflict our suffering on others or show our emotions in public. Strong emotions aren't very welcome. They make people uncomfortable. And there's something especially feral and primal about deep grief, isn't there? I think that's why there are expectations that we need to get past grief as soon as possible, move on, get past it. But I don't buy this. Scripture tells us not to conform to the ways of the world. The Message puts it this way: don't become so well adjusted to your culture that you fit into it without even thinking. Instead, fix your attention on God. You'll be changed from the inside out. And truly, suffering changes us. It can transform us dramatically, perhaps more than anything else in life. In his book, The Wild Edge of Sorrow, which I highly recommend, Frances Weller writes this: "We are required to die to the old image of who we thought we were and step across the threshold into a radically altered sense of self. Loss and grief are an initiation into a changed landscape, reminding us that everything is passing. By dying before we die, we are able to accept this fact and embrace this amazing chance we have to be alive." Grief is a truly transformational teacher, but if we don't enter into it and honor it, it can transform us for the worse. If we bottle up grief, it will break the bottle and flow out in the form of depression and anxiety, aggression and violence, substance abuse, and other forms of self-harm. I'm certainly not saying we should seek out grief or wallow in it or hold on to it beyond its time, because that leads to self-absorption, bitterness, maybe adopting an identity as a victim. We don't want to get stuck there. But when we allow ourselves to go into the abyss and move through the full experience of grief, we confront our greatest fears. We are forced to let go. And that allows us the freedom to embrace all of life the highs and the lows, the joys and the sorrows, to live life to the full, as Jesus said he would empower us to do. So if we are following Jesus into a full life, we are going to spend some time in the realm of grief. I've always found it comforting that the prophet Isaiah described Jesus as a man of sorrows and acquainted with grief. And we see this in the Gospels. We've looked at these stories recently. Jesus wept over his beloved Jerusalem because he foresaw the grief they would endure for not recognizing God's coming. And I suspect he weeps for humanity in our time for much the same reasons. He wept with and for his friends when they were grieving after Lazarus died. He knew betrayal. He knew rejection. He knew the pain of being misunderstood by his closest friends. They couldn't even stay awake with him when he was grieving in anguish on the eve of his death. He yearned for things to be different. Jesus fully experienced loss and grief of all kinds. With him having gone before us and being beside us now, we can emerge from our grieving more like him. So what does it look like to fully process and accept grief as a part of life? There's so much written about this. It's pretty overwhelming. Some of it's contradictory, it's controversial, and that's because psychologists are trying to label and categorize what is essentially soul work. And that's just asking for trouble. Most of the work of grief doesn't happen in the mind. It's in your spirit, your body, your soul. Some say there are 5 stages of grief, some 7, some 12. But the traditional list of the stages of grief, which you've probably seen, comes from psychiatrist Elizabeth Kubler-Ross. And it includes denial and shock, anger, bargaining and questioning, depression, and acceptance. And others have added, among other things, hope and reconstruction. These categories help us know that we aren't alone or going crazy. But labels can also be detrimental and lead to false expectations. In my experience, nothing about grief should surprise you. And it isn't linear. The stages don't happen in order. For me, it's like a spiral, revisiting emotions over time from different perspectives and to different degrees. I'll process, I'll let go of some things, I'll incorporate some new wisdom and insights, and then I move up the spiral and process again. I'm angry all over again. I'm doing the what ifs or the if onlys all over again. So don't impose a time limit on yourself, no matter what others might tell you. We're all different. Really, the key is to be open, to invite Jesus into your grief because he gets it, and to have grace for yourself and for anyone you might be accompanying on their grief journey. I want to look at 2 main themes for the rest of our time this morning. First, I'll suggest some practices for processing grief in a healthy way, and then I'll share some ways that I think grieving can help us grow and mature spiritually, some gifts of grief, if you will. So let's start with 4 practices for processing grief. Accept your feelings. Don't judge them. Self-care and self-compassion. Intentional healing, both inner work and community support. And rituals. First of all, accept your feelings. I've said this. Acknowledge them. Don't judge them. Don't fight them. They are your feelings and they belong in your life. Don't deny yourself tears if they come. Tears are therapeutic, both emotionally and physically. They help our bodies shed stress hormones and they stimulate endorphins, those happy hormones. But please don't worry that there's something wrong with you if you don't cry. Everyone is different, so don't judge yourself or others. Some practices that can help you accept your feelings are creating a small altar in your house or a grieving space where you can take your feelings to God and feel safe. I have a God box where I put my written prayers and sad thoughts, just write them down, sort of release them to God. One of the first things we almost always do when we've lost someone is gather photographs or letters. They help us welcome memories and feelings, alone and with others. You might want to carry a linking object. A lot of people do that, a keepsake or a gift from someone that reminds you and connects you to what or who you've lost. I wear my brother's bead necklace when I'm going somewhere and I wish he could be with me. Remember that your grief connects you to all of humanity throughout all time. So tune in to the universal music of sorrow that draws us closer to God and to each other. In the Hebrew scriptures, Job says, "My harp is tuned to mourning, and my flute to the sound of wailing." I just think that's beautiful. Another important practice is self-care and self-compassion. When you are grieving, whether it's a fresh loss or you're acknowledging and working through older grief you haven't welcomed before, or it's something massive like climate change or racial injustice, you are in a vulnerable state. Take care of yourself. Make sure you're doing simple things like drinking water. It's easy to get dehydrated, especially if you're crying a lot when your routines have been disrupted. Eat healthy food. Comfort food is fine. Mac and cheese. But make sure the majority of what you put in your body is good for you. Your immune system may be weak. Get enough sleep. If you can't sleep at night, take naps. Move your body. Do gentle yoga or strenuous workouts, whatever feels good to you. Take walks outside. Being in nature is so healing. Try doing something with your hands, like painting or knitting or puzzles. Repetitive motion with your hands can kind of balance the left brain, right brain, and help you get centered. And it's okay to take a break from your grief. There's no cause for guilt. It's good to get away for a day or a weekend. The grief's not going anywhere. And please be careful. A lot of your subconscious is distracted when you're grieving. So pay attention when you're driving and walking or using the stairs. Much of the real work of grief comes under the practice of intentional healing. That includes inner work and community support. So inner work means spending time in prayer, reading, journaling, by hand if you can, because the practice of writing helps your mind progress and move forward through your journey. You may have meaningful dreams when you're grieving, so give some attention to them and see what they offer. A therapist can be really helpful. I have a great one. If you're interested, I'm happy to give you her contact information. Most of this inner work will need solitude and silence, practices we talk about a lot here at Cedar Ridge. Society spends billions trying to distract us from our feelings, to anesthetize us. When you're grieving, especially acutely, you realize how trivial all this is, and it's a chance to step away from it, to set aside some time and create a safe and quiet place to heal. Community support is also crucial to intentional healing, and that can be hard for some of us. It's hard to ask for help, but people want to help. So reach out for emotional and practical help. Share your memories, your photos, tell stories, allow people to care for you. Grief is scary, and it can feel overpowering, so you need the support and perspective of others. Grief support groups have helped me a lot. There's an ongoing one at Holy Cross in their bereavement program. It's very good. And you can always leave if you don't like it. Keep in mind that you also may need to kindly distance yourself from some people who don't feel safe or who are draining to you. It's not your job to help others work through their guilt or regret or whatever. Stick with safe people for now. And finally, rituals. Ritual is essential to healthy grieving. It's an ancient practice, and it takes us beyond time, kind of out of time. Like I said, we try to understand and control grief with our minds, but grief comes from our heart, and it affects our spirits and bodies. And rituals help us embody our grief. They can connect us to the earth, our roots. They can be both personal and communal, so they may connect us to others as well. Everyone is different, and rituals you design will definitely vary. You can incorporate music, silence, chanting. Humming can be strangely comforting, the vibration of it. Writing is good, but that can take us back into our minds, so drawing may be even better. Engage your senses and incorporate elements of nature in your rituals. Get yourself grounded. Plant a tree or flowers. Burn something that you've written to release it, or bury something. Dig in the dirt. Get your hands dirty. Anoint yourself and others with ashes or scented oil. Light candles. You can drop rocks into water to let emotional burdens go. Don't be shy about it. Don't be embarrassed. Humans have used rituals forever because they heal. They work. So there are some practices that might help you move through your grief. Notice I say move through and not get over it. We never get over these big losses. We move through them and we incorporate them into our new selves. Grieving transcends the normal, and so do rituals. Grief takes us to a different realm, and that is sacred space. It's liminal space, where the veil between this world and other realms is thin. So be open to that. And if you are, you will no doubt discover that there are some gifts in grief that will help you grow. Some gifts of grief include we move closer to God. We grow in compassion. We grow in gratitude. We seek out joyful service, and we have a chance to reimagine life. When we lose what we depended on for security or identity, we turn to God. We get closer to God. Even if we might feel angry with God, we rely on her more. We read in the book of James, "Draw near to God, and God will draw near to you." And it's true. We can be sure that God is with us, most especially when we reach out in our pain, because grieving comes from a desire for love and connection, and that desire comes from God. Psalm 34 says God is especially close to the brokenhearted. The righteous cry out, and the Lord hears them. He delivers them from all their troubles. The Lord is close to the brokenhearted, and saves those who are crushed in spirit. And in 2 Corinthians, we read, "Praise be to the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, the Father of compassion and the God of all comfort, who comforts us in all our troubles, so that we can comfort those in any trouble with the comfort we ourselves receive from God." As we grow closer to God, we grow in compassion. This is another gift of grief. Compassion means to suffer with. So this passage from Corinthians tells us that God suffers with us, the Father of compassion, and that God's comfort softens our heart and stretches our own compassion for the world. That's why community is so important. We share both grief and comfort. Grief has always been communal until recently, when modern culture sent it off to the corner. If we want to be in authentic community with Jesus and with each other, we need to stretch our empathy muscle. We need to create space for grieving and learn to just be present and listen, even if it makes you uncomfortable. We don't have to have all the right words. We can't control it. We can't fix it, but we can be present. We can suffer with. Another gift of grief can be that we grow in gratitude, oddly enough. It seems counterintuitive that you'd feel grateful when you lose something, but we do appreciate what we've had once it's gone. I know we are all appreciating simple things in life right now, like hugging, like sharing a meal with friends, like buying groceries without fear. Most of us are more conscious of the present moment and grateful for what we have. Life is precious and we know it. Grief does that. During the grieving process, we often get glimpses of the kingdom of heaven, the kingdom of God. We see great kindness and generosity and compassionate presence. We sense God's provision for us in a real way. Our dear friend Shoba Duncan says that she has felt overwhelmed by the love that has surrounded her during Bill's recent illness, and his passing. She feels so grateful, even in her grief. Our gratitude and growing compassion leads us into more joyful service. Often, our first response to large grief is to want to help to ease pain in the world. Shoba renewed her nursing license so that she can administer the COVID vaccine. After my mom passed, I got training as a spiritual director because I wanted to help grieving people. Some people volunteer for hospice, some people foster homeless pets. We serve, though, not out of obligation, but from a bigger heart. As we learn to let go of having things our own way, which grief most certainly teaches us, we sacrifice more easily. Because what grief is love. Love with nowhere to go. It's love and attachment to someone or something that got disconnected somehow. So we can tap into that unattached love and spread it around. And finally, this gift of grief may seem impossible to fathom if you are newly bereaved. I know that. But grieving and loss will eventually offer us a chance to reimagine life. When you have a major personal loss, you can feel completely disassembled, torn apart, as if a foundational piece of yourself has been pulled out. And this reshapes us. We are never the same again. Whatever your losses have been in this time of isolation, we now have a chance to reconstruct our lives, to let some things go and try some new ways of living. Parts of our lives might look trivial or may have lost their appeal. As we rebuild our lives, we have an opportunity to live at a deeper level, to have a larger perspective. What motivates you now? What calls to you? What makes life worth living without that person or that job or your health or whatever it was you couldn't imagine life without? Grieving leaves a hole. What will you fill it with? How will you spend the remaining time and energy that God gives you? We're going to spend a few minutes in quiet reflection and prayer now. We'll use the welcoming prayer as we've been doing throughout this series, but we're going to do it a little differently today. In the welcoming prayer in general, you spend time paying attention and sensing what emotion you are feeling and also where in your body you might feel it. You can put your hand there if you want. Then you take time to fully welcome and experience that emotion and recognize that it has something to teach you. It's there for a reason. Next, you sense where the emotion's coming from, what is triggering it. It's usually coming from one or more of three basic human emotional desires or needs: power and control, esteem and affection, safety and security. And finally, you release the emotion to God, along with the basic desires that triggered it. Today, we're going to tweak that by specifically focusing on our feelings of weakness, vulnerability, and neediness. Some of the feelings that come up during times of grief. This might take courage because I know I'm not the only one who doesn't like feeling needy or asking for help. I like to be independent and strong. I like to be the helper, not the helped. But we are going to welcome that weaker part of ourselves today. We may feel shame or impatience or even contempt for it. And the feelings that arise as we acknowledge this part of ourselves will likely be triggered by those needs for safety and security, esteem and affection, and power and control. So I will walk us through this meditation. You may want to close your eyes or look at the image on the screen. So start by sitting comfortably and taking a few deep breaths as you welcome God into this prayer. Now quiet yourself and allow any part of you that feels weak, vulnerable, or needy to emerge. It may feel childlike and afraid, but it's safe here. If you feel your weakness and neediness in a part of your body, you can put your hand there. Begin to welcome that needy part of you. What feelings are you having towards your weakness? How do you respond to feeling that weakness? Can you identify if the feelings come from a need for safety and security, esteem and affection, or power and control? Now, release your needs for safety and security, esteem and affection, and power and control to God. As a child of God, you have all you need in these areas. Now, when you are ready, you can also release your weak and vulnerable and needy self to God's care. You may want to imagine hugging that needy part of you before you turn it over to God. Now thank God for caring for all your needs and open your eyes as we prepare our hearts for communion.